My next guest spent 22 years on death row for a crime he didn't commit. Nick Yaris was sentenced to death, the death penalty, after being found guilty of the murder and rape of a woman he had never met. His book, The Fear of 13, is out now, tells the story of his life and how he ended up in jail for over two decades. Nick, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
My goodness. I don't know how someone survives this psychologically.
Well, if you love anybody, that's what you do everything in life for, isn't it? And we find when we're really tested by the hardest things in life that we try and hold on for mom, dad, the people that love us. So when people say that I couldn't live in a cell for 23 hours a day for 23 years, I couldn't survive being tortured like that. You can if you love someone. That's what I tell them. You do it for others. You can't do it for yourself.
How did you first hear that you were a suspect? What happened?
Well, initially in 1981, I was driving a stolen car. I was a 20-year-old tearaway. My life had been destroyed because as a young boy at the age of 7, I was assaulted by a man in my neighborhood who sexually assaulted me and beat my head in with a rock. And he left me with a brain disorder. And I made it worse by becoming an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I was ashamed to my parents, you know. And I was arrested in the city of Chester, Pennsylvania, December of 1981. And a police officer lied on me and said that I attacked him. When he pulled me over from the traffic stop, he ripped me out of the car and said it beat me up. And I started resisting, and he pulled his gun out, and it discharged into the ground. So to cover up his mistake, he made up an elaborate story saying that I tried to murder him and all this, and they put me in prison. And it was during that point where I was in prison facing life imprisonment for kidnapping, attempted murder of a police officer, that I did the biggest mistake of my life. There was a newspaper in the cell accompanying me, and after days of being tormented with the bleakness of what was facing me, I made up a story that I might be able to help the police with the unsolved murder in the area. And within a very short area of time, they figured out I was lying to them. I was a 20-year-old drug addict. So they just said, well, let's just pin it on him. And that's what they did. They just gave
me the murder. But surely it takes forensics to prosecute you.
That's what you would think, but they were talking about 1981, and they destroyed all the homicide files. They put a man into the cell next to me who had been convicted of burglarizing the prosecutor's home, and they made him say that I confessed to him, and that's all they needed. And I was given a 3-day murder trial and sentenced to die at the age of 21.
And when you hear that verdict in court, sentenced to die, and you're an innocent man, how does your brain cope with that?
I kept thinking, what are they going to do next to my family? People were calling my mother at night and calling her a whore and a mother of a monster and all this stuff. And my father kept getting fired from work, you know. It was really bleak because I kept thinking about them and how they were going to be tortured. I knew I hadn't done anything. I knew I could hold my head up, but people were so cruel to my family.
And you walk down to that cell on day one, and you think you're never getting out again.
Yeah, I didn't walk. They drug me off a bus and beat me senseless, and then they made me stand there and explain to me that I wasn't allowed to speak in my cell for the first 2 years. Like
they couldn't say that.
Yeah, they did. I wasn't allowed to speak in my own cell. They beat me up on my 22nd birthday for singing happy birthday to me, man. I was sent to the only prison in America that was ever condemned by the United Nations for its active practices of torture. It was a brutal existence, and I was very, very angry at first. I thought, if I ever stop being angry, I'll never get out of here. And I made it worse because I escaped from death row. I was on the FBI's most wanted list, and then I turned myself back in after 25 days of that madness. I was only 24 years old. They sent me back to death row with 100 years on top of the death sentence, and I was expected to die. So I enrolled in university. I started educating myself. I read thousands of books, and I prepared to die. Everything that I did, I didn't expect to come home. So I figured all I could do was be somebody I could love before they killed me. That was it.
What happens to you when you're locked up like that? How does it change your personality?
It makes you really appreciate things. I appreciate that anger is a luxury that people on the outside squander. How stupid to get so angry over a traffic accident that you have to hurt somebody or you lose your freedom for years because of it. Silly to me. And it was really hard to test of my will to find a way to love myself when I was being called a rapist, murdering scumbag. And I'd been stabbed. I had my throat slit. I'd been strangled. The guards broke my face after the escape because they were humiliated. And I learned that all that torture taught me a great value about love, because I'm truly a very loving person because of it.
How much interaction is there in prison between the different prisoners?
Well,
you're not kept in solitary all the time, are you?
Yeah, 23 hours a day. You were given 1 hour of exercise 5 days a week, and then they put you in a cage. And sometimes the guards felt it was amusing to make us fight each other. So it's a world you could never understand, sir. It was one of the hardest tests of my life. I lived on a unit where the average rate of survival was 5 years, and I lasted 12. And then I went on to a new unit and a new unit, and I ended up spending 8,057 days in solitary confinement. In the end, I was sick with hepatitis in 2002. I watched as these other men died of this illness, so I signed up for the treatments, and they blinded me. So at that point, I asked to be executed for a crime I didn't do. I figured enough was enough. I had found a way to love myself. I wasn't going to die suffering like that. So I wrote to the courts and I asked to be executed. And instead, they finally got the DNA testing right. And 2003, the DNA came back and proved my innocent. And it took them still another year to let me go.
You met your ex-wife, Jacqueline, while you were in death row. How do you meet someone in death row?
She came there to investigate the conditions because they were so bad. Like I said, they were trying to file a lawsuit to stop people being openly tortured. And when she came there to interview me, I didn't have a single complaint. I was in the midst of my university studies, and I was just trying to be at peace with myself, so I didn't care about it anymore. I was okay with the fact that they were going to execute me for something I didn't do. I couldn't argue with that no more. I had screwed up my appeals when I escaped. So the only thing I could do was just be a polite, nice person. So when I met her in the interview room, I was just simply myself. And it really bothered her that I didn't have a single complaint. So she used to come back and see me, and she fell in love with me, and I didn't want her to. And that, it's funny because when I met her the first few months, I refused telling her I was innocent. Imagine that. You didn't do the crime. And this lovely woman comes and tells you that she cares about you, but you don't have the courage to tell her that you're innocent because you don't want her to be hurt.
How did you clear your name?
Say again?
How did you clear your name, Nick?
When I asked to be executed, the federal courts in America stepped in and ordered the DNA testing. In July of 2003, the final DNA testing came back and proved me innocent. They took me off of death row, they stripped me of all my possessions, and they put me in a mental cell, and they said that no human being could be put through the torture that they put me through and not want to kill one of them. So they didn't trust me until the very last day to be in solitary confinement.
And the DNA came back and basically said that you were never in contact with this woman, is that it?
Yeah, they have DNA from two men, two different men. And none of it matches me. And I couldn't have possibly had anything to do with the crime because I wasn't there. And in the end, they let me out in just January of 2004. And I filed a lawsuit and all that against them. But more importantly, I started fighting for the victim because I found out they weren't trying to solve the crime. I thought that was such an insult.
How long did it take you to clear your name?
Well, it took me all those 23 years, if you think about it, but it still goes on because the crime's unsolved, isn't it? And I feel for that family because here it is, December 15th, coming up again, and every year they have to relive her murder. And it's hard on me because every year I have to go through this bleak experience that my life was ruined around this time of the year. But I've done so well with taking control of it by using my education. And I'm glad to say that I'm going back to speaking all over the United Kingdom with a program called Authors Abroad. And I like that. I'm going back and doing speaking all over Ireland, Wales, and England. And I love that. My grandmother's from Ireland. And I love the feeling that I'm connected to this country bloodline, you know?
You must be messed up, though, Nick. No one.
No,
could,
I'm not.
No one could go through, no human being could go through
You're
that
wrong.
Experience. And
you're wrong, sir. I am one of the most productive people you would meet.
Sorry, I'm not suggesting you're not productive, but I am suggesting it's got to have affected you long
it
term.
It hasn't. That's the that was the beauty of my education. The only thing I struggle with is I don't like to cut my fingernails because they ripped them off one time on me. And I don't like to have blood on my plate because I lived through a riot. Otherwise, I have no stigmas. I've never had one psychiatric counseling situation. You understand me? I've never laid on someone's couch and cried about what happened to me. I was never mentally broken because I educated myself so well. I studied 6 years of psychology from university. I worked and I worked and I worked to give myself enough education to give myself separation from what was done to me to who I am. And that's the thing that holds people back. Although the story that I went through is very bleak, the outcome is stellar in my performance to change my life to be a very positive person who can go around and speak to students about how important their education is so that they can fix their lives just like I did. Sorry, sir, I'm not messed up for what they did to me.
Well, then, that's incredible.
It is, and that's why I have this ability to have a platform in life. Because I work so hard at what I've done, I'm able to inspire other people to not be overwhelmed by life, to not be destroyed. No matter what happens to you in life, you mandate the changes, either through the positivity of your own efforts or through the negativity of your ego and your hurt. And I chose simply to be a super positive person. For the last 12 years that I've been out, I've spoken before governments. I just came back from addressing the UN. I have a new book, like you said, Fear of 13, that's out. I just wrote another book. I have two stage plays and a television show and a film being made, all because I used my education.
So what's life like now? Have you managed to settle down?
Yeah, I just had a baby a few months ago. Yeah,
fantastic, and
I'm doing the right thing. Listen, I know that healing comes from children. And that the only people you can truly give all your good to is children. So I'm tapped into that. I'm really wired to be a family guy. And I love it that I got three little girls in the house and I have a lovely partner. I live in the southwest of England and I just got a new job working, going to schools, speaking. That's productive. That's purposeful. That gives meaning to everything I suffered through.
Nick, I wish you all the very best. Thank you very much indeed for...
Thank you, man. Thank you for letting me speak to the people of Ulster especially. I send you my love and happy holidays this year. Peace and love, everyone.
Thank you very much. Good morning.